हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Page 9, number 9. The Bhagavad affirms that the Vaishnava soul, when freed from gross matter, will distinctly exist not in time and space, but spiritually in the eternal kingdom of God, where love is life, and hope and charity and continual ecstasy without change are its various manifestations. So that's the natural position of the soul. That's the natural relationships and interactions is based on this. Right, because we're talking about prayojani here. Right, and these are the stand straight. Controversial passages were just these two.
Yeah.
Okay. 10. In considering the essence of God, two great errors stare before us and frighten us back to ignorance and its satisfaction. One of them is the idea that God is above all attributes, both material and spiritual, and is consequently above all conception. Like as Prabhupada mentions, I think only in one place where he says Krishna is beyond material and spiritual. Mm-hmm. But, as it says here, it's the thing that's frightening. So I mentioned that once, that they just know, no, he's spiritual. How can you say he's beyond spiritual? Because he's the source of spiritual. Right? Because spiritual and material are his energies. He's the source of the energies. That means he's beyond. He's something else. But then it makes it hard. How do we relate? At the point we relate to him through his energies. Right? Because he only interacts with his energies through his energies. Does that make sense? So him as a person, he's interacting and we're able to appreciate his position based on his position, that means based on that loving position as in the previous point. Love is life, hope and charity and continual ecstasy without change are its various manifestations. So there's manifestations, there's change, but it always maintains the same transcendental position. Right? This is a noble idea, but useless. If God is above conceptual and any sympathy with the world, how to explain this creation? This universe composed of properties, the distinctions and phases of existence, the differences of value, etc. Right? So, the point is he's beyond. But the point is he's not inconceivable. Because we think he's beyond, so we can't understand. But he's beyond, but he's the source of. But the whole point is it's all him. Right? Does that make sense? It's, yes.
He's beyond, and then why wouldn't we understand this creation?
Because it's one of the ideas that since he's beyond, we can't understand.
That's, he is inconceivable.
He is inconceivable, but by his mercy you can conceive.
But it doesn't matter if he is beyond.
It doesn't matter. That's why we don't put any emphasis on it. What I'm saying is it comes up with is there, then it takes us into another realm because we judge everything by time and space. Yeah. So that's why it mentions beyond time and space. The Bhagavad affirms that the Vaishnava soul, when free from gross matter, will distinctly exist not in time and space, but spiritually in the eternal kingdom of God. Because we have a tendency to look at it time and space. So therefore, then we can't understand then how is this, and he's unapproachable and all that, so then we just go back into the material consciousness. Does that make sense? So the point is he is everything, so it's the point is we're always in contact with him. It's just a matter of the revelation. So if we have that interest to know him, then he reveals himself. So. The other error is that God is conceived to be merely an all attribute, i.e. intelligence, truth, goodness, and power. This is also a ludicrous idea, because we just look at the Brahman aspect. Right? So he's beyond means, in other words, what are we looking at? We're looking at him exclusively as Brahman, or exclusively as, or predominantly as Paramatma. Right? That's the point. Because before, he's beyond, everything's from him, he's controlling, he's like this, and so how do we deal with him? So how can we have a relationship? The other is that we think he's just these qualities. Right? So you have to come to the point of appreciating Bhagavan. Therefore, Bhagavat. Right?
If what is said over here is contributed, it's an error if you consider only the Brahman platform.
Yes. Yes.
Because actually this is truth, that he is all these goodness, power. The Brahman is his one teacher. It is not an error teacher. Brahman is Bhagavan's teacher. So how can it be an error? It is partially true, we can say, or partially correct, we can say.
It means the key here is the word merely.
Okay.
Somebody said?
Consider only that.
Yes.
Yes. Also, he explains in the same terminology as the Bhagavad Sandarbha explains. First explain the Bhagavan, the full aspect. Through that you can explain Brahman and Paramatma.
Yes.
Otherwise it is wrong. Yeah,
because people ascend, so they only start on these other aspects. But when you start with Krishna's Bhagavan, then coming down becomes very easy. Like that. They're just aspects of him.
If somebody conceives of the Supreme as Brahman,
right,
because it's partial, they cannot know Krishna in full, of course.
No.
But they can know part.
Yes.
But usually we say it's the first step in God realization.
Yes, yes. But it's only a first step if you have the association of the devotees. So that for in connection with devotional service, then it's the first step. But if there's no devotional service, this will keep one from going further into the personal aspect of Bhagavad. Does that make sense? Because those who are impersonalists, they don't go forward to Bhagavad. They're afraid of that. The other one, he's so great, he's so big that we can't have anything to do with him. So therefore, we just happily go along doing our stuff. He's some other thing, he does his thing, and we just sit here in the material world and do our thing. You understand? You can see in world religions and all that, that these two fears keep people from going beyond into Bhagavan. Realization. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah. So, that's what he's saying. It's something that's there, but it's not necessary in the aspect of relationship and everything. You know? Does that make sense? Yeah. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna.
Say goodbye.
Oh, okay. So then, you're heading off.
Yes. You see, I was sick. I could not come to the
class. Oh, okay.
At least I can offer more reasons.
Okay. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. Are you saying bon voyage?
Bon voyage.
Yes. This is also a ludicrous idea that he's merely that. And here you see is that the impersonalist, the Mayavadis, take it a step further. The Brahmavadis, he's just the attributes of intelligence, truth, power, goodness, all these things. So they don't have a problem that, you know, but that's all that they're looking at. The Mayavadis say that even these don't exist. So it's even more ludicrous, right? Because it's not a proper philosophy. It's Buddhism. Right? Scattered properties can never constitute a being. It is more impossible in the case of opposing principles such as justice and mercy, fullness and creative power. Right? So then when you get into those things, then it becomes even more strange. How do they hold this together? Right? Does that make sense? Because otherwise you have these opposing elements, so then what they do is they just deify God and put him in one place, and then everything else they don't deal because they can't put them together. The truth, as stated in the Bhagavad, is that properties, though many may be belligerent, are united in a spiritual being where they have full sympathy and harmony. Certainly, this is beyond our comprehension. It is so, owing to our nature being finite and God being infinite. This is a glimpse of truth, and we must regard it as truth itself. Often, says Emerson, a glimpse of truth is better than an arranged system, and he is right. Right? So it's how much truth is necessary to bring about that attraction to the Lord. Right? So that's why it says the gopis, they're not great scholars. They don't require scholarship to be impressed with serving Krishna. Mm-hmm. Right? They'll serve Krishna anyway. But all this knowledge is here simply because we're not impressed with Krishna. Yes. And so, you know, and we claim that, our intelligence and all this, so therefore all the logical presentations and all these different arguments and all that are given, which are all correct, but how much is necessary to get us to accept and surrender? Right? And as we see is that the six schools, these are the basis of all the inappropriate approaches to the philosophy and culture. Right? And from that, then they have so many derivatives like that. So that's why then it's a study. Right? So it's just how much is necessary. So if one has that faith, then you have the basic solid aspects. So it's not that, like the Sahajiyas say, we don't need knowledge. You need. Because the point is if you have no anartas and you're just absorbed in chanting all day, that's fine. But when you have anartas, then tattva is necessary. Right? Mm-hmm. Krishna is tattva, so it's also him. They make it out as if knowledge is something separate from God. But he is knowledge. So then what's the problem? Talking about knowledge is also talking about him. 14. The Bhagavat has, therefore, a personal, all-intelligent, active, absolutely free, holy, good, all-powerful, omnipresent, just and merciful and supremely spiritual deity without a second, creating and preserving all that is in the universe. The highest object of the Vaishnava is to serve that infinite being forever spiritually in the activity of absolute love. So if you like adjectives, here is your sentence.
So now we can learn English.
Yes. Because he's used, you know, this is from the classic, you could say, Victorian English.
Yes.
You know, so they were good at English. They had their pride in the language, like that. And you know, it actually could express things back then. Nowadays, it's the intonation. Before, you could actually use words and describe it in a very, you know, how you say, calm, peaceful, gentle way. Now you have to use all tonal qualities and that, and you know. Because all you do is put so in front of something. It's so nice. You know, before they actually had words. Does that make sense? Yeah.
That's you say now that they have two words, nice and awesome. That's it.
Yeah, and I always avoid the awesome one.
Nice.
But Prabhupada used nice a lot, so...
In the 1800, literature was considered a science, and biology wasn't.
Biology wasn't. They may be onto something. Oh, that's funny. Yeah, because it was part of the the trivia. You know, so you had rhetoric, logic, and grammar. And they were the first things, they were the basis, because then you knew how to present things logically, you knew how to present an argument in case they like that, how to make a presentation, the rhetoric, and you had the grammar. So they're all considered like the same kind of thing. Then the quadrivia, once you have that, then you can apply it into mathematical side. So they took the language side as first, the communication as first, and then the next one was the all based on math. Interesting. Criticisms of the shallow critic regarding the deity. Vriti, here the author addresses the misconceptions caused because of the mundane perceptions of the divine pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna. Right? Same time he's beyond, the same time he's not beyond. That's the problem. They don't go into any depth. They just look at the words. That's why you say shallow. It's just the words only. You know, it means here in the The word is merely. That's a good word.
Yes.
Not used as much as it used to be. But merely, it's just we're only seeing it in that. Because we say just, it, sometimes you think, oh, it's not that. But merely means it's that, but it goes beyond. Right? So then here. One, the shallow critic summarily rejects Vyas as a man worshiper. He would go so far as to scandalize him as a teacher of material love and lust and the injurious principles of exclusive asceticism. Right? So here is that even though the modern things are always going to be based on material love and lust, right? But the thing is they'll always use it as a fault. Right? Because if you use it as a fault, you can always cover your own.
Yes.
You know, it's just like, let's say something goes wrong socially. Someone comes out doing something wrong. So many times, the first one to speak up against it, to show that their solidarity with that it's wrong, is another person who's doing the same thing, but he has not been caught yet. And they'll come out really, really strong. Right, so if you see it's aggressively strong, then you know there's something wrong there. Either they're doing that or they're trying to protect themselves or something like that. There's something not correct. Because the other were just using these words like we see Bhaktivinoda Thakur, then explain what's wrong. Does that make sense? Or there's someone who had those qualities and now they've corrected it and are able to therefore see the fault in what the other person's doing. That person can make a comment. Does that make sense? So here's that they just cover themselves like this, an exclusive asceticism. So they don't like asceticism. But the point is if material love and lust is a problem, so that means they're trying to be more renounced. So then what's the problem with the asceticism? So the point is the asceticism's too much, the love and lust is too much. Because the Vedic, you can talk about it. Right? In the Vedic scene, if you have people, you can actually talk about love, lust, sex, these things like that, and it, because you're dealing with the science of it. People can listen. In the West, they can't. You just don't talk about these things. Even though the society is committed to love and lust, but you can't talk about it. Unless it's in some kind of, the literary romantic way. You know, it means romantic, meaning bringing out the ideology of it. But that's the funny thing. In a culture that's hedonistic, they try to put a covering on it. You know, it's just like, let us say, Americans. They're known for being more hedonistic of anyone on the planet, right? Most all cultures of the world will accept them that way. You know, and even on a good day, if they look at it, you know, they'll think themselves like that. At the same time, they have more restrictions on these things, on love and lust, than, let's say, Europe. Does that make sense? Storylines and films and stuff that in Europe would just be normal, in America, they would be restricted. At the same time as what Americans will do is beyond what Europe would do. Right? In other words, you can't watch the movie because it's bad, but on the street they'll be doing things that no one else would do. Does that make sense? So that's the funny part, is that these combinations of this is that it just becomes strange. They can't put together the opposites. So without accepting Bhagavan, you cannot reconcile opposites. Like it said before, that's the problem. They even if they say it's all the qualities, they can't reconcile the opposing qualities. So it's only in Bhagavan that we can actually see, but that takes depth. So the shallow critic, because he's just working on words, and these words don't match together, then they can't function. Two, such shallow critic's mind will undoubtedly be changed if he reflects upon one great point. In other words, how it is possible that a spiritualist of the school of Vyas, teaching the best principles of theism throughout the Bhagavad and making the four texts quoted in the beginning of the foundation of his mighty work, could have forced upon the belief of men, the notion that the sensual connection between a man with certain females is the highest object of worship. Right? So if you check that what all is there and what is being established, then why would they come up with this problem? Because then you see the proper balance, how it is, how Krishna and his energies are functioning. Right? But the difficulty comes up is because they don't go deeply into things. Because that's not the point. They just want, like to argue. See, generally the shallow critic thinks he's smart. They have a wider range of knowledge and probably vocabulary than those around them. So they can criticize everyone. If they get into a group of people who are really good at criticizing, then they might have a problem. Right? You know, it's just like the kid can be a bully as long as he's in a classroom of nice kids. But you put him at that same bully at detention, you know, might not do so well. Is that what I said? So, yeah. 3. This is impossible, dear critic. Vyas could not have taught the common vairagi to set up a place of worship with a number of females. Vyas could teach us repeatedly in the whole Bhagavat that sensual pleasures are momentary, like the pleasures of rubbing the itching hand, and the man's highest duty is to have spiritual love with God. Could never have prescribed the worship of sensual pleasures. His descriptions are spiritual, and you must not connect matter with them. Right? So that wouldn't happen. Why would someone he's teaching this asceticism and all these aspects about the Lord, why would he attribute to a purely spiritual being and spiritual, associates, material, lust, greed, and all these things? But that's what they do. They just project themselves. Right, so amongst the shallow critics, you also see is that the idea of what it called is the anthropomorphism, where man projects his own nature on God. You know, it's like you say God's a person. Oh, you're just projecting your own nature. That's the problem. These shallow critics, they can't appreciate what's beyond. Yes, dear critic, you nobly point to the immoral deeds of the common vairagis, who call themselves the followers of the Bhagavat and the great Chaitanya. You notably tell us that Vyas, unless purely explained, may lead thousands of men into great trouble in time to come. But, dear critic, study the history of ages and countries. Where have you found the philosopher and the former reformer fully understood by the people? Right? I mean, where does it work out? It never really worked out.
This is many people take this point that we need to be squeaky perfect. But
yeah, but then there is no reformation. Yeah. You know, the whole point is that, you know, we're talking about, oh, we should fit in. And now, what is it, like 2 billion or 2.4, some kind of huge amount of people are Christian. You know, of all religions, it has the greatest, you know, singular number of volume. Right? So then, and we will use that Christian platform, specifically the Protestant, right? If you're working with the more modern and all that, liberal, you're not going to use, you know, Catholic, you're not going to use East Orthodox or Oriental. You're just not going to use that. You're going to use Protestant, because Protestant means there's no acharyas, there's no saintly persons, there's no standard. You don't, you know, it's not about the decoration, that it's just everything's plain and all that. It's between you and God. Right? And then, you know, for convenience, you may get together. Does that make sense? So that kind of principle, then it basically means it's anybody does what everybody does. And so whatever is the popular thing amongst your group that you feel is important, then you try to fit into that. Because it doesn't matter, it could be anything. But the groups that don't fit into yours, then they're a problem. Even though amongst it, there are hundreds and hundreds of groups, and each one of them is convinced that any of the other group, though they're Christian, are all going to hell. So only their specific group of Christians are not going to hell. Right? The others automatically are going to hell. Within your group, they don't have to go to hell, though most of them are. You know? And only yourself and your few that you really feel are up to the standard are the only ones going to heaven. In other words, Peter does not have much of a job. Like that. There's plenty of space, right? They have to use a shoehorn to get everyone into hell, right? Because it's just... So the difficulty comes up is that it's always, this principle is always there. So the reformers, they are going to have people who don't like them. Even if you're not a reformer, still people don't like you. Right? You know, it's just the way it is. You're in the material world. Because we're dealing with shallow critics. So, but at the same time, why is that in effect? And we say, oh, this is the standard. Because someone tried to reform. Right? And so, some liked, some didn't like. Prabhupada mentions, you know that you're preaching successful when you have clearly those who are very committed and those who are very against. But if people aren't committed and aren't against, that's not successive preaching. So this thing would just kind of blend in like that, you know, that's what the what do you call it? What are those guys called? Chameleons, that's what they do. They just blend in. They're walking along in one color, you know, they're green, they go up onto the wall, they turn a different color. So if that's perfection, then maybe that's the idea of the rainbow. All the good, whatever, it can be anything. Okay. Fine. Whether you give the absolute religion in figures or simple expressions, or teach it by means of books or oral speeches, the ignorant and the thoughtless must degrade it. Whatever you do, they will degrade it. Quote, truth is good. Is an elemental truth which is easily grasped by the common people. But if you tell a common patient that God is infinitely intelligent and powerful in his spiritual nature, he will conceive a different idea of what you entertain of the expression. All higher truths, though intuitive, require previous education in the simpler ones. Right? So as we see is that as we go into the more technical things, by having that background of the previous discussions, then it starts to make sense. But the same points, as we see, have been there all along. It's just the predominance will be on other aspects that we need to appreciate to be able to understand this level. Does that make sense?
So we need education.
We need education, yes. So because they themselves pride themselves on their education. You know, but the point is they need to be clear that the education that they're going through is enough that actually they can appreciate the depth of Vyasa and his teachings.
Mm-hmm. Right. Without education concerning the Bhagavan aspect, it's always a problem.
It's always a problem. Means, like Mati was pointing out, is that anything is always a step. Just like, let's say, somebody's worshipping demigods. Mm-hmm. It's a step towards bhakti because they're accepting higher, you know, principles. I mean, higher personalities, more energy, control. There's submission. There's a worship. You know, in doing that, they have books. They have guru. They have a sadhana. So these are all aspects you use in bhakti, just that they're misapplying it. You know what I'm saying? So it's just like, you know, someone has, you know, some butter. It's very nice. And then they have a butter knife, that's good, and then they use the butter knife to spread it, that's also good, but then they take the butter and spread it on the couch. You know, it's a waste. But at least they got that. Now all you have to do is replace the couch with a piece of bread. You know, the couch is brown, the bread's brown, you know, it's kind of, you know, like that. You know, there's texture to the couch, there's texture, you know, it's just like that. So it's just a matter of that. So that's the meaning of the broad-mindedness of the Vaishnavas, is they don't criticize the others for their position. They see what's good, that they have all these. That the point is why all that trouble, then you're worshipping someone who's not the Supreme. So they're going through all the difficulty of the worship of the demigods, but all they'll get is something temporary. While that same effort, they could be applying to the Supreme Absolute Truth. and get eternal benefit. You understand? So you're keeping what's good and adjusting what's bad. You know what I'm saying? So there's no compromise. It's a matter of you see the essence and then you apply the detail according to the position. Is that right? Yes? Part 2, the teachings of Srimad Bhagavatam. So this was all part 1?
Introduction.
Hmm?
Introducing the subject.
Introducing the subject. That's what. Introduction. Oh, introducing the subject. Okay, so now we know what the Bhagavat is and what to watch out for. Okay, part 2. The teachings of Srimad Bhagavatam. The great divisions, relationship, function, and fruit. Right? So, Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojana. 1. The teaching of Srimad Bhagavatam falls into 3 distinct parts, consisting of 1. Sambandha, or relationship. 2. Abhideya, or the function, or activity that pertains to the relationship. And 3, prayojana, object of fruit of such activity. Right? So the activity is based on the relationship. And that will give, therefore, that relationship with that activity gives a particular result. Right? So that's why we see is the result is what you're trying to get. So the relationship, that knowledge, that activity, that's all in, subservient to the fruit, the result. Right? So, the jnana and kriya shaktis, they're subservient to fulfilling icha shakti, or Krishna's desire. Right? So when we say we're pleasing Krishna, it has to be Krishna's desire. Right? Otherwise, let's say I'm going down to the office, and I am going and I'm dressed nicely, speaking nicely, may even take, you know, some gift or something, to the person behind the desk there, the bureaucrat sitting there. Mm-hmm. And so what's my idea? I want to please them. But what's the goal of pleasing them? Is that the ultimate goal? No, it's just to get them to sign my paper. You understand? So even though it's using the process of bhakti, it's not bhakti. Does that make sense? It's only bhakti when it ends with Krishna. It's his desire that's being fulfilled. And ours then naturally is taken care of. Does that make sense? So that's why we see in nectar devotion that definition of pure devotional service means it's about Krishna's desire, means what's actually pleasing to him. Right? We're not talking about the secondary form. We're talking about his actual pleasure. Because the secondary form may look nice or not nice depending on the individual. 2. In the compilation of Vedanta Sutra, the aphorisms of the Upanishads, which contain the highest teaching of the Vedic literature, are presented in the form of a systematic body of knowledge under the headings of Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojana. Srila Prabhupada pointed out the first 2 adhyayas are Sambandha, the third Abhideya, and the last Prayojana. Isn't it? Yes. In his Satsandarbha, Sri Jiva Goswami has applied the same method of treatment to the contents of the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is admitted to be the only authentic bhasya, or exposition of the Vedanta Sutra. Right? So Srimad Bhagavatam is the actual authentic commentary. Right? The Prabhupada says natural commentary, because it's not a direct commentary, but all the points that are there are covered. As we see, we have Bhagavatam verses for all that. And there'll be more. It's just, you know, the ones that are most obvious than are used in the study. 3. The first of the 6 sandarbhas, the Tattva Sandarbha, applies itself to the elucidation of the epistemology of transcendental knowledge. This is made possible by the comparative study of religion on the only admissible and scientific basis. Epistemology is the?
Praman.
Okay, how do you establish what's authority? So that would be, epistemology would be the Shabda, Anvikshiki and the Pratyaksha. Or that's, and then what's ontology?
Ontology is the Prameya.
Prameyas, okay, what you're proving. Okay. So how you gain knowledge and what you are proving by that knowledge. Oh, okay. Transcendental epistemology, a summary of the Tattva Sandarbha. Vriti, in this section, first, the Lord and his 3 principal energies are defined, and then emphasis is laid on the vulnerable nature of jivas to become disassociated from the absolute person. I'll just say, is that, what do you call it? Because we're writing in the context of Bhaktivinoda Thakur's Victorian English. Our own vritis have upped their game. It's nice. The nature and characteristics of the souls who, by their own free will, choose to disassociate from the Lord, and those who choose to be subservient to the Lord, is elaborated afterwards. Right? So, we see is that we're defining Sambandha Abhideya and Prayojana. Now, some living entities, they disassociate themselves, or they turn their face away from Krishna. And then those who are surrendered to Krishna, they turn towards Krishna. Right? So, Lord Sri Krishna has three principal energies. One, Sri Krishna, the ultimate reality, is one without a second. He is distinct from his energy. Sri Krishna is the predominating absolute. His energy is the predominated absolute in the three positions of antaranga, internal, tathasta, marginal, and bahiranga, eternal, external, respectively. Right, so he is a predominating absolute, and the energy is the predominated absolute, because it all together is the absolute is Krishna. That's why when we take the thing, it takes it exclusively, they take it one way or the other, then it's a problem. Because if he's beyond, but the point is beyond what? His energies, which are non-different from him. Right? So in other words, if he is the predominating absolute, he has to be beyond the predominated absolute. But the point is it's still all him, because it's all absolute. So that means there's entrance, there's accessibility. Right? Does that make sense? Or if we don't distinguish, it's just these qualities, then who is he? Because the qualities are his energies. So then, so we see as they're talking about Brahman, it is him, but they're only talking about this quality. So you see it's not actually, they're seeing more the secondary aspects. The Brahman and Paramatma, those who are exclusively stuck there. They don't actually see the primary aspect of him as a person and his nature, his desire. Because when we talk about God, we just talk about he's the controller, he's the maintainer, he's the destroyer, he's the lawmaker, he's the judge, he's the witness. Have we mentioned about him as a person or why he's even doing this? It never even comes up. So he's unapproachable. Therefore, he stays in his place and we stay here and do our thing. Right? And he's beyond, so he's not involved in this because there's so many faults, so we have to make it correct. Therefore, we have something to do. And of course, we take care of God's creation for God because God's beyond and he doesn't take care of it, so we have to do it. You understand? This way they get distracted from their position. They stay away from God. It's subtle. They accept God, but they stay away. Right? The Brahman, they're accepting him on that platform, but they're only accepting some qualities, you know, or very few. Right? They may accept that this quality may be saguna or they may be nirguna. If it's nirguna, they say nirguna, but they accept unlimited, eternal. Right? Because they have to at least get the Satchitananda part. Right? He's all knowing, he's knowledge, he's eternal, and there's Brahmananda, eternal bliss. Right? Because that's themselves, so they can't go less than that. Does that make sense? But they only are working on these aspects of his purpose, because he's not different from his energies, but they're seeing it in this other way. Because Krishna is Brahma, he's pervading everything, but he's doing it through his energies. But at the same time, that masculine principle, which is him, is also there. Because even within the quality, there's the masculine aspect and the feminine aspect. Because by Sat Karyavad, he's always present.
When we say absolute truth, it means he's God and his energies.
Yes, but in that means God and his energies, because it's Achintya Veda Veda Tattva.
And when you say God, it's mainly Bhagavan.
Yes, Bhagavan. He's the predominating absolute, while his energies are the predominated absolute. And then the predominated has three positions, antaranga, tathasta, and bahiranga.
So without understanding the concept of the absolute truth, we cannot understand the relationship between Krishna and the energy.
Yes, yes. That's why you see so much emphasis is on the Sambandha Gyan, so we actually understand. We can say, oh no, but all this Gyan is not important, it's just rasa. But the problem is then we don't distinguish between what's spiritual rasa and what's material rasa.
Yes.
Does that make sense? And so it is about rasa, but then the problem comes is that someone may have the difficulty of being absorbed in the spiritual. There's a nice kirtan, they're absorbed, they're right there, they're into it sincerely and all that, but at the same time, since they're not distinguishing, then when they go out and go to the restaurant, then they're also in that same mood of rasa and enjoying and being fully. So it's a very funny position, because there's not distinguishing between the qualities of this. You know? So one has to be able to tell, one has to know how they're one, but how they're different. Right? Otherwise, one may not make any distinction, probably.
That's sahajas, isn't it?
Yeah, the sahajas can get into that, but it's also a funny mix, is it'll have the gyan, have this, it's just, yeah. Means all, you can use sahajas as the broad category. Like most all the upasampradayas, we can call it all sahaja. We can just say that. And just like all the varieties of impersonalists, and all, they're just, you know, mayavadis, like this. But they're also, within all this that group, there is a particular group that's called sahaja. Like that. Is that, you know. And so then they have them, they have owls, bowels, and...
Sakibaki.
Huh? Yeah, no, but there's another one that I think... How's balance? And it's the fourth one. They're like the four orders, the Brahmachari, Vanaprastha, Sannyas, and Grihastha. You know, it's that Sahaja brings that out. It's that they're all connected, though they're in that way, because if you identify your Sahaja, you're in a particular situation. Like that. But it's all the same kind of one big happy family.
Also, like in the past time where one devotee, he wanted to recite in front of Lord Chaitanya the poem he wrote.
Yes, yes.
That's the exact problem that happens. They disturb the whole rest of...
Yes, yes, yes. That's why Swarup Damodara would check that it doesn't disturb the rasa.
And then both Swarup Damodara and Ramananda Rai were considered the highest of the rasa dealers. Yes. Here the greatest, they also know that that's what is happening.
Yes, that's the whole point, is that it's not that we don't know the tattva, you just use it where it needs to be used. It's just like, it's not that the cook doesn't know all the utensils in the kitchen, but for a particular preparation, you just use those that are required. You know, you don't have to use all of them. So that's the thing, it's not about the utensils, it's about the cooking. Therefore, you have all the knowledge. So that's why you see Jiva Goswami in his presentation of Nyaya Prasthan, it still has that sweetness to it. Because you're only applying how much jnana is required to get the work done, not to get the taste. See, Vedanta Sutra gives the taste of Nyaya Prasthan, of logic, of jnana. But the Sandarbhas don't, even though they're written in the same style. Because only how much is necessary to do that. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like the knowledge, how much knowledge you use is very practical. But when you put it into an academic context, they will explain the same thing so it gives the academic rasa. You understand? So that's the people. People will explain whatever their position that gives the rasa according to the modes they're in. Does that make sense? So that's why even within, like we were saying, sahajas, then as Prabhu was pointing out, we have so many varieties. Because they're all the same basic thing, just as a little bit of taste this way, a little taste that way. You know what I'm saying? And the one is, how you say, they're thinking that they're Radha and Krishna and other things, but they don't dress as Radha and Krishna, right? But in this other group, they dress that way. You know, so it's just different flavors of bogusness. Does that make sense? You know, like, I don't know if you've ever seen the Saki Bakis? You have a guy with a bit of a beard, and he's dressed in a sari, and, you know, like that. Yeah, it's a bit weird.
Nowadays, it's the cutting edge.
Oh, really? You see more of them now?
No, in Europe.
Oh, yes, that's true. Yeah, so they've been way ahead of everybody. Yeah. Yeah, that's the thing. In India, everything is there. That's why they can go anywhere and do well, right? You know, it's what I'm saying? You take someone from a more of a traditional Indian background, they can go to any culture, anywhere in the world, any place, and sit down and do things and make money. They just fit in, they can do, because there isn't anything that's not. You know, it's just like, you know, how you say? If it's like that, and they're, you know, you're in the car and they're knocking on your window, you don't roll down your window. But in the West, then it's a whole thing, you know, they... But you know, they've been here for forever. You know, that's the thing. You want to do that? Go for it. Who cares? You know, you don't make a thing out of it. Okay. Two, antaranga is that which pertains to the proper entity of the absolute person. The literal meaning of the word is, quote, that which belongs to the inner body. End quote. And the word Shakti is rendered as power. The power that belongs to the inner body. Right? So the pertains to the proper entity of the absolute person. In other words, Krishna himself properly. Right? As Bhagavan. Tatasta means literally, quote, that which is on the borderline as between land and water. End quote. This intermediate power does not belong to any definable region of the person of Sri Krishna. It manifests itself on the borderline between the inner and outer body of the Absolute. Right? Because it's just said like that, the land and water. You have the beach. Is it land or is it the ocean? That's the whole point. Is when the water's down, it acts as land. But when the water's up, it acts as ocean. So that's the thing. It's just whichever one it's going to be. It's not that the beach is in its own separate category. It's when it's like one, it's like the one, you know. You know, like early, like twilight. Early twilight is when it's more day. Late twilight when it's more night. But it's made up of these two. It's not something else. That makes sense? Yeah. So that's us. Right, so that's the point. We can either identify with the internal potency or with the external. So that's the... Four, the power that manifests itself on the outer body is Bahirangya Shakti. There is no difference between the body and the entity of the absolute person. The distinctions as between the inner, outer, and marginal potencies of the body are in terms of the realization of the individual soul. That's why you see is the... Bahirangya Shakti is still Krishna. That's why Krishna is everything. But at the same time, is he himself personally manifests through his internal potency. So then you have to see the connection between the external and his connection to the internal, and therefore to Krishna. To be able to appreciate him as a person. And for those who have love for Krishna, that connection is simultaneous. It's naturally spontaneous. It doesn't require the intellectual platform that we use. Like we use Jnana Yoga to connect through knowledge our material position to Krishna. Right? Or we use Jnana Yoga to connect our material position to Krishna. Right? But bhakti, the spontaneous bhakti means it just happens automatically. Even though these aspects of karma and jnana are there in their life. Right? Because we can say Kriya Shakti is activity, Jnana Shakti is the knowledge. So they're just part of what they do, but it's all about Icha, so it's all about bhakti. So you don't distinguish it. Does that make sense? Thank God.
But now we need to be, to act according to our own level of consciousness.
Exactly. Like he says here, the distinctions as between the inner, outer, and marginal positions of his body, meaning Krishna, are in terms of the realization of the individual soul. Yes, so that's why the position of manana is so important, that we can analyze our position. Because if we can't analyze, then we can't go to any depth. We can't understand what's there. Otherwise, we'll just go by the external words, and then it won't. Yes, we'll see, like we see as the shallow critic, is that he just sees certain words or certain activities. Oh, it's You're too fanatic. Oh, this person is too not serious enough.
Yes.
So where is what does that perfect devotee look like? Right? Because basically everyone except yourself and a few of your accepted friends, and even then you don't say it, but even they are either too fanatic or not serious enough.
Yes. Only one.
Yeah, so that leaves us and then there was one, right? Yeah, when you go neti, 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 it's just all that's left is yourself, right?
Maharaj, so it is the natural position for the jiva to see simultaneous when they become liberated.
Yes, I mean, so it's a natural position. You see them, it's all is non-different, so you don't see, but you can still tell the difference.
Mm.
So you understand he's non-different, but you can tell the difference between the various aspects.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Just like, let's say you're offering artik. Where do you offer it to?
Mm-hmm.
You can tell the difference between his head and his feet and like this.
It's easy for them to be Krishna conscious then.
It's easy for them to be Krishna conscious, but we have to understand this to become Krishna conscious.
Mm-hmm.
Right? 5. Although Sri Krishna is one without a second, he has his own multiple forms corresponding to the degree and variety of his subjective manifestations. The subjective manifestation, the subjective entity of Sri Krishna is not liable to any transformation. His different forms are, therefore, aspects of the one form manifesting themselves to the different aptitudes of his servitors. Right? So, he himself, in his subjective principle, he is one. Right? But according to the different aptitudes of the servitors, then he has different manifestations. Because they will see him in different ways. So, you have, because remember is that what he was mentioning in the beginning, is this knowledge, is that, I think that was in the beginning of the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu Bindu, is that this knowledge both applies to the Paramahamsa as well as to the neophyte. Because it's the same, it's just the depth of realization. So for us, we'll look at it, okay, we see the material variety in Krishna's beyond.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
But we see is that for, but otherwise within the platform of the transcendental, Krishna takes on the nature according to the nature of his servitors, the aptitude of his servitors.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, he's manifesting in forearm form in Vaikuntha. Right, in a two-arm form, in Vrindavan. Does that make sense? Yeah. So it's just a matter of what is the flavor. It's just the aptitude. Like you see, is that there are those who we see. Let's say you have a deity of Rukmini and Dwarkadish. Right. So some deities means in north they'll always have two arms, but in south they might have two arms. They might have four arms. You have Krishna, you know, dressed as Krishna, playing his flute, you know, like Radha is there, but he'll have four arms.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's Vaikuntha. It means Braj is Braj. Everything below Braj is Vaikuntha. It's just a matter of if there's how much mix of sweetness is there,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to the majesty.
Mm-hmm.
So, Six, but the power of Sri Krishna is transformable by the will of Sri Krishna. These transformations of power in the cases of the internal and marginal energies are eternal processes. In the case of the external energy, the transformations of power are temporary manifestations. Right? So internal and marginal, these are eternal positions of the transformations. But with the external energy, those transformations, those are temporary.
Yes.
Because the pradhan is eternal.
Mm-hmm.
But any transformation after that, and we know the whole creation, starting from avyakta, it's still all temporary.
Yes.
Unless you're referring to pradhan as avyakta. But, you know, when we're making a distinction between pradhan, avyakta, and mahatattva. Then, you know, that case. So pradhan is eternal as an energy of the Lord, but its manifestations, its transformations are not. Well, the jiva, the transformation, the jiva is being a transformation of the tathasta shakti, our eternal.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Right? The internal potency. That there, the manifest, that's eternal. Seven, the phenomenal world is the product of the external power of Sri Krishna. The absolute realm is the transformation of the internal power. The individual souls are transformations of the marginal power. These jivas are the eternal infinitesimal emanations of the marginal power, capable of subservience to the inner power, but also susceptible to disassociation from the workings of the inner power.
Nice wording.
Yes, that's the whole point, is that through wording you can explain. In here he's explaining the most technical philosophy, but he's using wording that people would appreciate that something's there. They may have understand it fully or not. That's another thing. We're not talking about that aspect. But the point is if you're talking with someone, that this is their language, then they would know that there's some very thoughtful things going on here. They would inquire in that way. Because that's all part of that culture. They would ask. Right? So all it is you adjust that wording to what works in the particular, time that you're speaking. Does that make sense? So that's how it works. So it's not you're changing the philosophy. You're just changing the how nicely it's expressed. Like that. What words you use and all these things. And till it gets down at one point where they can just kind of carve emojis on walls and caves. Yes. Methods of approaching the Absolute. Sri Krishna is Advaya Jnana, or Absolute Knowledge. Absolute Knowledge cannot be challenged. That's the whole point, is we can't challenge it, we can try to understand it. That's the whole idea. Before, when it surrenders to the how you say, in Bhajana Kriya, one should clear the doubts that you're convinced of this. Right? But this option that it's always up for discussion, that means we're not actually surrendering to the absolute truth. Because Krishna's beyond understanding. So it's only if he reveals. So you're comfortable that what is there, that it's consistent, and so you surrender to that. But this keeping the independence where we don't, then that's always going to be a problem. He can only be approached by the method of complete self-surrender, by the reciprocal, otherwise ineligible cognition of individual souls. Right? So, self-surrender, by reciprocal cognition. Otherwise, it's you're ineligible. If you don't use this process, you're not eligible. It's not that, there's ways that... No, there's one way of being eligible. Submissive inquiry. Service, the desire to know, that's how you approach. But if you don't, one is ineligible. Like that, because it's Krishna. He sets the standards. We're knowing him. He says how it should be done, not that we say how it should be done. Does that make sense? That's it. Only if there's surrender can you say how it's done. You know what I'm saying? That's the culture. It's just like... it's well known, how you say, it's an unspoken, how you say, secret, that the husband is totally controlled by the wife. Right? But what's the point? Because of that full surrender. So when there's that full surrender, then there's control. That's why in the modern context, it's completely bogus. There's no surrender, but still, the desire is there to control. But where's the right? Because the right goes with obligation. Does that make sense? So when there's self-surrender, then it works. And if that self-surrender is not there, one's not qualified. One can't have that position. 9. Transcendental epistemology is differentiated from empiric epistemology with respect to relationship, sambandha, function, abhideya, and object, prayojana, for the reason that it refers to entities that are located beyond the limited range of the assertive cognitive endeavor normally practiced by the deluded people of the world for their temporary purposes. Right? Because even we say liberation, it's temporary. Mm-hmm. So, therefore, the empiric epistemology, then they're taking it that their sambandha abhideya and prayojana, their definitions will be different from the transcendental epistemology. So how we'll define soul, they'll have a different way. How we'll define the Lord, they'll be different. The process, the results. So that's why we're saying is this formula of sambandha abhideya and prayojana. You simply define what is their idea of the absolute, what's the idea of the soul, what's the idea of the material nature, and their relationship. Right? Then, what is your process based on that knowledge? And then, what's the result you'll gain from that process? And defining every philosophy by that, you can see what's real and what's not. What's eternal and what's not. Right? So, because of the soul, generally they'll be attracted to some aspects, so it's not that everything about it is necessarily bogus. Right? But the point is that only those things that are valuable have any use, everything else has to go. Right? So then you wherever that position, you start with that, and that position then you use for Krishna. Does that make sense? Like let's say we had one devotee back in the 70s. His background, he was, you know, they were professional kirtaneers. And so his madanga, what he knew in that, was amazing what he could do. But that was the only part that was kept, other than, you know, you did kirtan, he plays madanga, he knows the tunes. Like that. You get up in the morning, there's some sadhana. That's all you kept. Him explaining it, that was no question. Because in their line, they would do the kirtans, they would give the discussions, they would lead the whole, you know, because they were professionals in that way. So that one part you keep. You don't say, oh, this is bogus. You know, you don't do kirtan. No, he was very good. But now, as a devotee, he only used that part. And he didn't use the other parts. Does that make sense?
Maharaj, without actually being in contact with pure devotion, we don't use so much things of our...
We don't see?
We don't use so many things of our...
Yes, we don't, because we take it the external that it's not useful. You know, just like I gave the example of the... we were serving prasad, I think it was for, the GBC. And so the boys were involved, and there were a few boys from, you know, very cultured backgrounds. You know, like from Calcutta or different places in India. You know, from cultured backgrounds. They were assisting. But they weren't doing a nice job. And so then afterwards, sitting down and going through and explaining everything. And what I was explaining and how you serve was not foreign to them at all. So then my point was, as I asked them, why aren't you doing it? You know, it says, if your sister was getting married and at serving the prasad to your guests, would you serve the way you're serving here, or would you serve the way I was saying that you should serve? They said, we serve the way you said. Of course. So why aren't you doing that here? Oh, because that's mundane. That's the material. That's a wedding. But here, this is spiritual. Now we're doing it the spiritual way. So in other words, they've applied the impersonal thing that if that is material, then the opposite must be spiritual. So that's the problem. Since we don't understand this balance, that shallowness, then we don't see what's useful and what's not. Like Subhag Maharaj said, Prabhupada had told him, because he's from an aristocratic, you know, Calcutta family. And he was in London studying law. And so then when he met Prabhupada, Prabhupada said, don't forget what your parents have taught you. In other words, all the culture and all the dealings, like you see, Subhagamai, he's known, he's famous as a gentleman, him, Bhakti Trumar, because they're cultured Calcutta Bengalis, you know, it means aristocracy. Like that. And you see it, that this how what they do and how they can just do things that for us drive us nuts so easily. You know, just arranging for shot and the serving and all these, it's just so easy for them. Because that's the culture, that's the background. So they understand what Prabhupada said, they've kept that, and then it's so much appreciated. Right? But so many others, then they reject it because that's material, and therefore, you know, brahmachari means rah-rah, and, you know, chew on a chunk of wood for breakfast, and spit on the ladies, and, you know, like that. That's a brahmachari. Like that. I think that cough is, he knows plenty of those. Yes. So, does that make sense? So that's the thing, is that this depth, you can see, that's where Bhaktivinoda Thakur is in the beginning. He says, you don't go back. You start from where you are. Remove what's useless that's taking you off course. And what's useful, you start from that point and go on course. Because on course means towards Krishna. Does that make sense? You know, so that's the whole point. Then it becomes very, very easy. So to make that, be able to make that distinction, to be able to tell what is useful and what's not, that's then what the acharyas are giving us, right? Hence the analytical, training that we've been getting from the, you know, from Gita, you know, on through all the cantos, is trying to give us that understanding so that we appreciate what's going on. Otherwise, then the tendency is we won't. We'll just fall naturally back to the default settings of karma and gyan. So if it's not karma, then it's gyan. If we're not attached, then we're renounced and have nothing to do with it. Right? So the yukta vairagya principle is just not understood. So we see what's useful, keep that. What's not useful, that we leave. You know, and replace that with what we're supposed to do. Ten, by the peculiarities of their infinitesimality. Yeah? Wow, I like that.
That's very doesn't accept
that. Huh?
The modern dictionary.
Oh, no. Because the problem is lexography means, at least in English, documenting what is, how it's used. You know, only in Sanskrit, the dictionary defines how it's, what it is. Right? So then they'll say it's not a word. It's just not a word being used, but it is a word. By the peculiarities of their infinitesimality, essentially spiritual nature and marginal position. Right? So the peculiarities of being so small, spiritual in nature and marginal in position. All individual souls have the constitutional option of choice between complete subservience and active or passive hostility to Sri Krishna. Right? So you see there's active, but you also see the passive. Like we were saying, you know, God is great, he's beyond and all that, this material world is faulted, so this is our place, we deal here, God deals there, and he has nothing to do with this. So it's a passive hostility. Like that. And the active, then the atheist who, you know, that's it. These opposed aptitudes lead them to the adoption of correspondingly different methods for the realization of the respective ends. Mm-hmm. So depending on what they want, depending upon how much it's subservience to the Lord or how much it's, hostility to the Lord, then the various methods are there. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's going to be very individual and very, very, you know, very regionalized, very community-based, very, very little groups, all these different things depending upon that. So unless we surrender to Krishna with that subservience, then there'll be one method. Though the secondary may have variety, but there's only one attitude. Variety of secondary, one attitude. But if you're dealing with a hostility, then there's a variety of attitudes and varieties of methods, so no one can find anything common like that.
All the philosophies of the world are explained.
Yes, that's the whole point. What's the whole point? Is that we start to see what we're dealing with.
Yes.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandini.